Hi, and welcome to another HTA podcast. In this edition of the podcast, I'm inviting you to join me for the last lecture. I really have to put that word in quotation marks. The last lecture in my second year course on 18th and 19th century architecture. And best of all, it's a guest lecture. So let me set this one up for you. We're at the end of my course on 18th and 19th century architecture. Spring is in the air, and I want to go out with a bang. I want to do something a bit special for this one. So I think to myself, rather than finish with another lecture, let's finish with a podcast. Podcast about what? Well, one of the overarching themes of the course has been the relationship of the present to the past. And I'm thinking, wouldn't it be great to bring that theme right into our own time? Maybe look at a notable 18th and 19th century site through 21st century eyes. Ideally, a site that we've already studied in the course. And even better, if possible, a site in Canada. So, who could be my guest? It would be great to get a former student from our program, the History and Theory of Architecture at Carleton. Someone the students could really connect to and identify with, someone who could inspire them at what I know is a stressful time of the year. So, yeah, all I need is an HTA grad, who's now an established professional in the field, who's an expert on some Canadian 18th or 19th century site, one that we've already studied in the course, and someone who can really connect with the students. Yeah, good luck with that. The person I need probably doesn't even exist, right?
I'm Hillary Grant, and I am the Heritage Officer and Senior Planner with the Town of Lunenburg.
There are days when I cannot believe how lucky I am. Hillary Grant came to Carleton from Newfoundland and graduated from HTA in 2012. It's a long journey from St. John's to being an undergrad at Carleton to being the Heritage Officer and Chief Planner for a UNESCO World Heritage Site. So I started by asking her to sketch out her trajectory along that path.
But I'm originally from Newfoundland, and my family is from Trinity, Newfoundland, which, of course, is another place just dripping, just so rich in sort of 18th, 19th century vernacular architecture. And the first time I really remember going to Trinity, and I remember being surrounded by those vernacular structures, many of which my family's name is carved into. The Grants are a long line of carpenters. I really felt that sense of character, that amazing ambiguous term that you used in your lecture really captured and spoke to me. So I always knew that I wanted to do something related to architecture, and I knew I wanted it to be related to the historic built environment. I really wanted to work to conserve these incredible places that had been created by people for people, and that still meant something to people. So that led me on the hunt to study specifically architectural history. I wanted a program where I could take as many architectural history courses as humanly possible, and Carleton is that place in Canada. So I came to HTA, and through a wonderful twist of fate, you, Dr. Peter Kaufman.
Yep, that's me.
Took a position at Carleton and had done research in Trinity. And so that really just sealed my fate as an architectural historian and heritage practitioner. So when I finished the HTA program, I knew that I wanted to pursue heritage planning. I went and did my master's in Britain, the University of Cambridge, and was really fortunate that when I came back to Canada after completing that, I got a job with the government of Saskatchewan as a heritage planner. I decided to come back, do my PhD. I was at the tail end of finishing up my PhD. I had done my doctoral research on the town of Lunenburg, and this position became available. And thankfully, they thought it was a good fit. So it's really been incredible to come full circle and be working in a place again on the East Coast, so close to where I was born and raised, in a town that has such incredible heritage significance, not just locally, not just nationally, but globally. It is a UNESCO World Heritage District. But again, I'm helping to conserve these structures that have been built and largely maintained by the people of Lunenburg.
Lunenburg, of course, is one of the best preserved historic towns in the country. Such preservation doesn't happen by accident. It results from sustained effort and commitment. I asked Hillary where this effort and commitment came from. Was it a top-down initiative or a bottom-up grassroots movement? She explained that it's not simply one or the other. Successful conservation is a puzzle with a lot of pieces. In Lunenburg, those pieces were local, national, and international.
There is an incredible history of volunteerism in Lunenburg. People are unbelievably giving and generous with their time. And that has always been the case in terms of any sort of memorialization. So even in the 1920s, we had the Fisherman's Memorial Service, for example, that honored those fishermen who were lost to offshore disasters. So these types of things, this idea of commemorating community history through a combination of services and built form, was very much in the zeitgeist very early here in Lunenburg. So that's one piece. Another piece, the history of the heritage movement is normally seen to stem from a couple of key moments. One is the modern movement, and by that I mean the Enlightenment, the early modern, I suppose. And in that you see nationalism, monument construction, those sorts of things. You also have many people who credit the history of the heritage movement as stemming from sort of a postmodern movement, some people would say, in around the 1960s. And it's very much a reaction against modernization. So we see community protests erupting all around the world. We have Jane Jacobs down in New York. Well, we have that happening here in Lunenburg at the same time. We have incredible heritage society that is founded later, but the members started becoming very interested in heritage issues around that period. You have some very early planning documents that are written in Lunenburg that mention heritage concerns. And that movement just continues to grow as the movement is also growing on the international scale. So again, you have this interesting confluence of all these things that are leading to a movement that is simultaneously top-down, because you have heritage professionals looking at Lunenburg and noticing Lunenburg, but is also bottom-up. It's also driven by the population.
Big puzzle, big pieces. But another important lesson comes from this. Sometimes a single individual can make a big difference.
One important piece that I would like to highlight is the work of Bill Plaskett. Bill Plaskett was a planner, and he accepted a position here in the town of Lunenburg as planner. And his research and his work, both with community groups and advocating for the recognition of Lunenburg as a heritage site, is, I think, incredibly unique. I think he really pioneered his own really fascinating approach through visiting other heritage towns in the United States to conserving the built environment that was very ahead of its time in a lot of ways. And I do think that in the years to come, he will or should perhaps be enshrined as sort of a great seminal figure among many other of his generation in the heritage movement in Canada. So you have this perfect combination of things: increased attention from the outside, increased advocacy from the inside, the right professional person in the right job at the right moment. You have a city council who becomes very interested in seeking a UNESCO designation. Meanwhile, the National Historic Sites and Monuments Board of Canada is sort of sniffing around to find a district to nominate under the criteria that Lunenburg has. So it's so easy. You know, we want to say this, it's this one moment in history that changed this one way of seeing the built environment. But I think Lunenburg is a perfect example of the messiness of life and how so many great things come from that incredible mixture of all the right ingredients.
The result of this mixture was, of course, Lunenburg's designation as a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Everyone who knows Lunenburg knows that it has this status, but many don't fully understand the rich texture of qualities that resulted in the towns being given that designation. There were three reasons. The first was the town's famous grid plan, perfectly preserved from its foundation in 1753.
The World Heritage Committee to UNESCO deemed Lunenburg to be of outstanding universal value, that's their words, outstanding universal value, for three reasons. The first one is because it's the best preserved colonial settlement in North America. The best preserved colonial settlement in North America is really related to that grid, that absolutely incredible orthogonal grid. But it runs deeper than that. It's also the setbacks of the buildings and how they reinforce the linearity of the grid. It's the grading of the streets and how they speak to the colonial government's lack of attention to the local topography, the local landscape. It's also the continuing function of the town of Lunenburg along Morris's original plan. So Charles Morris was the surveyor for the Crown, the Department of Plantations, I believe it was sort of unfortunately called, but again, really speaks to the coloniality of this place, you know. He very clearly laid out the plan and set aside four central blocks as the civic heart of the city. The rest of the blocks were residential commercial. You know, he didn't circle certain blocks and say, this is the commercial district and this is the domestic, you know, residential district. That kind of evolved naturally over time. But he was very insistent on those center blocks being set aside in public trust. Those blocks have continued to be set aside for public use. Those blocks are both publicly accessible, they're open to everyone, and they provide public services, services of benefit to the community. So that's why we, for example, see the courthouse, the armory, at one point the jail. We, of course, have the incredible Anglican church in those blocks, the parade square. We have a bandstand. Many, many years later, the war memorial was set in those squares. They have continued to be the public heart of the town. So that's what we mean by the best preserved colonial settlement. It's not just the grid. It's more than the grid, though the grid is integral to that.
So what, besides the grid, did UNESCO recognize with its designation?
The second reason that we are of outstanding universal value is because of our rich vernacular architectural tradition.
Ah, vernacular. But what exactly is vernacular? We made a couple of attempts to pin it down earlier in our course, first as architecture concerned with domestic and functional rather than monumental buildings, then as a way of getting things done based on the readily available and feasible. Hilary adds another idea to that mix.
I really loved the definitions of vernacular architecture, Peter, that you provided in your lecture, but I am going to throw an extra one in there. It's by Tom Carter and Elizabeth Cromley, their 2005 book. Perhaps it's my romantic nature, but I do really love sort of the beauty in this definition. And what they basically say is vernacular architecture is not common, but it is commonplace. And what does that mean to be commonplace? It means that it is not outstanding. Perhaps it's more humble. It is primarily made by people, for people. So some people think of it as an architecture by the quote unquote untrained, though of course these people are incredibly skilled, you know, but they haven't received that sort of formal architectural education. But then of course, there's also this aspect of place in commonplace. So it's common, but it's also intimately tied to place in that vernacular architecture is always adapting external influences. So that includes styles and building techniques to local ecology, social, cultural, and geographic traditions. And I think that's kind of speaks to the pragmatism. So it's really a material manifestation of, dare I say, the everyman's hopes and dreams and desires, their needs filtered through local ideas and values and beliefs. And that's what's kind of really interesting and special in Lunenburg. You have this colonial imposed plan. You have this incredible vernacular architecture tradition. To me, it's a real love story on the push and pull between the local and the global, straight from its founding all the way to the UNESCO designation.
So there's the grid plan and everything tied to it, and the vernacular tradition. And one more thing.
The third reason it's of outstanding universal value is because it is a town that was planned and has grown from a culture intimately tied to the sea. So this is very much a seafaring place. Lunenburg has an incredible seafaring tradition. Again, I mentioned the Blue Nose, probably the most famous ship to ever sail out of Lunenburg, but it really was a hub in what everyone refers to as the golden age of sail. And there are incredible archival photographs that I highly recommend anyone looks up where the harbor is just full of schooners, just towering. And the incredible carpentry skills that go into the boat building tradition, how they then manifested in the architectural tradition, you know, so it's all tied together.
Lunenburg received World Heritage status in 1995. Just 6 years later, it was dealt a huge blow. St. John's Church, one of the most important buildings in the heart of the town in the Parade Square, burned down. It was a devastating loss, but it brought out the community spirit that had always served Lunenburg so well in the past.
What I really find inspiring and really interesting about St. John's is the community reaction to the fire. Only the community can determine what is an architectural expression of and by the community. So what I find really interesting about St. John's is the unbelievable devastation felt by the community because of that fire. It was deep. I mean, people still talk about it here. It is an incredibly important part of the oral history here. And if you do go back and read a lot of the news stories, they are truly heartbreaking. And I think the one that sticks with me the most is there was an interview with the local firefighters who first arrived on the scene the night of the fire. And I won't be able to quote it verbatim, but one of the men recounting his thought process and his feelings, trying to decide if he would break the stained glass to get into the building. And what a terrible decision that was for him. And in the end of the day, he did it because obviously public safety. I mean, let's not forget that. This is a wooden town. This was a major fire in the heart of a wooden town, but also because he wanted to save what he could. And as devastating as the fire was, there was still a fair amount of original material still intact. It was incredibly well documented. And at the time, the belief was that it was arson. That narrative has since been challenged, but again, still very important in the oral history here. And so for the community, for them, they weren't letting a criminal take from them this place. And I think that that is very interesting. Some conservation professionals could argue that it should have been replaced with a quote unquote modern, but I would rather say contemporary, because of course modern has a certain stylistic connotation, so I prefer contemporary, a contemporary replacement of some kind. But my understanding is that that is not what the community wanted.
There it is again, that sense of community and its absolute centrality to heritage and conservation.
There is no historic Lunenburg without the incredible community that lives here. They are the stewards of this place. It can't happen without them. And history has proven their power again and again and again.
But being the custodians of a place deemed to be of global heritage importance is not a simple thing. It's a huge responsibility. And it comes at a cost, which the local community has to pay.
In part, I think heritage challenges arise when other challenges bump up against heritage concerns. One example is housing. It's not news to anyone that Canada is facing a housing crisis. So is Lunenburg. Lunenburg has an incredibly rich building stock. Absolutely stunning. That comes with a certain price tag. And with that comes both opportunities and challenges. Right now, the way that that is playing out is that there's very limited rental housing here, for example. It is not a particularly affordable place to try and live. I would also like to really praise the residents here, because one thing that I think many people don't know is that neither a National Historic Site designation nor a UNESCO designation comes with standing funding. You can apply, for example, for cost-sharing grants with Parks Canada, but it's not as if Lunenburg becomes a World Heritage Site and suddenly it's getting a stipend towards its conservation efforts. What that means, and I hope that this really sinks in with people, is that the people who live here and the people who work here are responsible in many ways for the conservation of a universally significant asset. They are really carrying the burden of that conservation challenge on behalf of the global community and is perhaps not recognized adequately. The biggest challenge I face as the heritage officer and senior planner is, again, this slippery concept of vernacular architecture. On the one hand, it's a continuing, evolving, living tradition. On the other hand, these buildings are incredibly unique, irreplaceable artifacts. What are the guardrails that you put on change to ensure that this district remains an important historical document, but also a living town? How do you manage that? And again, at the end of the day, that is really a community decision. You know, I'm really just here to facilitate that. But that is difficult. And the decisions made on that question have real impacts on people's lives, the way they live, what they can and cannot do to their homes, to their businesses. You know, these are real problems.
The Lunenburg community has taken on that burden and shouldered that responsibility. And so, argues Hillary, should we all, wherever we live? In fact, she issues us a challenge. It's addressed specifically to my students. But if you care enough to be listening to this, then it's aimed at you too.
I would call on everyone to get involved in their heritage planning process. You can nominate something to be designated. You can put in comments on your community plan. You can have thoughts on your heritage bylaw that controls your city. So if I were a professor in the History and Theory of Architecture program, or even just as someone being interviewed for a podcast for the website, I would like to charge every HTA student to write one letter that has to do with the historic built environment and send it to their municipal council person. Just one letter. You write essays every semester. I know that you do research in the places that you live because I've been fortunate enough to read those essays. And I'm constantly amazed by the insightfulness of Carleton students. So take that essay, take that thought, take that critical thinking and turn it into action. Put pen to paper, send it by email, gold fashioned, put a stamp on an envelope, send it to your municipal council person, have them actually consider it at a council meeting. And you could be responsible for saving a special place for the future.
And if you do that, if you help save a special place for the future, you're leaving a gift of lasting value.
Nothing transports a community like a historic place. And that's why I do what I do.
This HTA podcast was produced by me, Peter Kaufman. My guest was Hillary Grant, Heritage Officer and Senior Planner for the town of Lunenburg, Nova Scotia. The music was by Oliver Schroer.